holds. And I'm sort of coming from the perspective that we don't know what those objects are or what they're like too much. So for those of you that are familiar with these things, I hope you'll bear with me. But what we want to do is start with thinking about the following question. Say we turned this room into a magic rocket ship that could go as fast as you can imagine. So whatever the fastest speed you can imagine, let's double that, and that's how fast this rocket ship goes. And it's never going to run out of gas, and we're never going to die as long as we're in it, and we're going to go that way. Okay? So the question is, what's going to happen to us? So does anybody have anything they want to guess what would happen to us? So for those of you, I heard maybe there are some people from other majors. So let's sort of take this from a naive perspective, and if you are like a physicist and you know all kinds of fancy stuff, let's sort of leave that behind and talk about this from a naive perspective and just try to think of the possible things that could happen. Does anybody have any ideas? Okay, so we could always get farther away. Okay, is there any other possibility?
In the shape, we could come back to where we are.
Okay, we could come back. Come back closer. Is there anything else that could happen in theory? Regardless of whether you think this is actually what would happen in the universe, is there another option, or are these the only two things that could happen?
We could eventually stop getting further away.
Okay, we could stop getting further away. So one of the ways we could stop getting further away is that we could come back closer. Is there a different way we could stop getting further away?
We could just reach some maximum distance.
Okay, we could reach some edge. We could reach like an edge of the universe or a boundary of the universe. And if you think about what people thought a long time ago about a similar question on the surface of the Earth, they pretty much thought it was one of these two options, right? When people imagined what the Earth was like thousands of years ago, they thought that if we went that way for a long time and nothing was ever going to impede us, either we would reach some sort of edge and maybe fall off the edge of the universe and get swallowed by a sea dragon or something, or we would just always get further away. And it turns out, as we know, that in the case of the shape of the surface of the Earth, it's actually this middle choice, because the surface of the Earth actually curves around. So if we start at some point and we go for a walk, for a while, every step we take is taking us further away from where we started. And then we reach some point, and we then after that, every step we take is getting closer to where we started. So there's a lot of stuff I'm sort of suppressing here about straight lines and things that we're going to ignore for now, because we just want to get the general idea of this. Okay, so I hope I don't disappoint you too much when I say that I'm not actually going to give the answer to this question I started out with about what is going to happen, what would happen if we went off in our magic rocket ship. That's not the kind of stuff that I do. Maybe one of you someday will discover that. So I'll leave that to you. But for now, we're just going to talk about what kinds of shapes a three-dimensional universe could have. And so the big question for today that we're going to come back to in several forms is, how could we tell what the shape of a universe is from within it? Okay, so that's the big question for today. Now, this example that I gave here of the surface of the Earth and people thinking about what shape the surface of the Earth is not actually a good analogy for this big question that we want to answer. Because, well, people who were trying to figure out the shape of the surface of the Earth have all sorts of external cues that they can use, right? There are stars that they can look at, and we have shadows and things like this that give us external cues about the shape of the surface of the Earth. And so what we want to do is tackle a question that's related to this and is going to give us intuition about this big question about how we can figure out the shape of our three-dimensional universe from within. Okay, so what we're going to do, I'm probably out of camera range, what we're going to do is go down a dimension, take it down a dimension, and talk about how two-dimensional creatures might discover what the shape of their two-dimensional universe is from within. Okay, so we're going to have to do a little brain stretching and consider the perspective of a two-dimensional creature. So to help us in our task, we're going to enlist the aid of my favorite two-dimensional mathematician, this guy, Pac-Man. And every time I give a talk like this, I have this moment where I hold my breath and wait to see if everybody in the audience says, "Who's that?" But it hasn't happened yet. You guys know who Pac-Man is, right? You have thumbs up on Pac-Man? Super sweet. Okay, so the big question that we're going to tackle first before we tackle this big question for our universe is, how could Pac-Man tell the shape of his universe? Okay, so before we try to figure out how Pac-Man could tell the shape of his universe, let's us figure out the shape of his universe from without, not from within. Okay, so Pac-Man lives in a magic rectangle. And this rectangle is magic because every time he pops off the right side of the rectangle, he pops back in the left side of the rectangle. And every time he pops out the top of the rectangle, he pops in the bottom of the rectangle. So that's pretty magic. But actually, it's not really magic, and we can realize this thing geometrically. So if we consider my piece of paper to be Pac-Man's universe, the top of the piece of paper, if he's sticking half off the top of the piece of paper, he's sticking half onto the bottom of the piece of paper. So we can actually consider the top and the bottom of the paper to be the same point in space. And we can realize this geometrically by sort of folding this around and gluing the top of the paper to the bottom of the paper. I'm going to erase the big question, but we'll come back to it. All right. So if we glue the top of the paper to the bottom of the paper, we have this cylinder that Pac-Man is living on. But we also have the fact that if he comes off the right side of the paper, he comes on to the left side of the paper. So it's a little tricky for me to do that with this paper because it's kind of stiff. But you can imagine that if I was able to actually bend this around, it gets all crumpled because paper is too stiff to do this. But if I was able to actually bend this around, what would I end up with? Yeah, we'd end up with a torus. Okay, so Pac-Man lives on the surface of a torus. So everybody said the word torus, so everybody already knew what a torus was? Yeah,
question.
Yes.
Why couldn't he just live on a sphere?
Okay, that's a good question, and that's what we're going to talk about next. So there are two different possible questions. Why couldn't he live on a sphere, and why doesn't he live on a sphere? In this video game, the actual Pac-Man video game, because we have this property that this is just another picture of Pac-Man, right? So these are two equally valid pictures of Pac-Man, or maybe this is Pac-Man and his friend. And Pac-Man is not conscious of whether or not he's drawn in this way, split in two, or whether he's drawn in this way, right? So we have this one-to-one correspondence between points up here and points down here. And so when we realize that correspondence by actually identifying them physically, we get this cylinder. And similarly, we have this one-to-one correspondence between points over here and points over here. And when we glue them together, what we get is a torus and not a sphere.
Okay, it seems like,
yes.
Sorry, I haven't been listening.
No.
It seems like you're doing that because you're doing each axis independently and in an order. If you were to do it in the opposite order, say, start on the sides first, you're doing
okay.
Like a vertical torus. Why wouldn't you do both of those axes simultaneously? I guess because that's what would create a sphere.
That still would not create a sphere, and we'll talk in a minute about how I can tell that it will not create a sphere. But you'll have to believe me for this second that it will not create a sphere, no matter if I just did it all instantly, it would still be a torus. Okay, are there any other questions about this? Nope. Okay, so that is my next question, is how can Pac-Man tell? So now, let's say we believe, if you'll suspend your disbelief for a second, and believe that this thing, when we glue it up like this, is in fact a torus. The question is, how could Pac-Man tell? So first we'll talk about how Pac-Man might tell that he doesn't live on a sphere. Or another way of saying this is, how could Pac-Man tell the difference between a torus and a sphere? Okay, so I'm not going to tell you the answer. I'm going to make you figure out the answer. So I want you to take, I'm going to give you several minutes to think about this and draw some pictures and talk to your neighbors about, well, what's the fundamental difference between a torus and a sphere, and how could Pac-Man determine that difference? So remember that Pac-Man is a two-dimensional creature. He lives in the torus or in the sphere, not on top of it. So don't imagine like a piece of paper with a little guy on top of it. He's inside the torus. So his line of sight is in the torus. So this is what his line of sight looks like. He can't see me waving at him up here. I'm not in his universe. He can only see other things that are in his universe. So for example, he couldn't see like across this gap and say, oh, look, there's a hole there. He can only see in his universe. And if he needs it, he can have a little toolbox. You can make up a toolbox for him of things you think that might help him figure out if he lives in a torus or in a sphere. But I hope you'll indulge me and talk to yourself and talk to your neighbor about ways that Pac-Man might discover whether he lived in a torus or a sphere. So please talk. Okay, so he's walked around and laid a blue string down.
He could pull on both ends and it wouldn't come to him.
Okay, so he could pull on both ends. So he's pulling it this way. And it would never what?
Well, he would never have all of it. I mean, assuming that it doesn't stretch, it would just like, he would get stuck at some point.
Okay, it would get stuck at some point. And if he did this on here,
it would just pull up over the top and add it all.
So this, if he put string around here, he could pull it all in, he could gather it all in. Okay, good. So that's one difference. So he could say, well, if I do find this path that I can walk along and I lay down my string and then I can't gather it up, I must be on a torus. Is that correct that he must be on a torus?
He must not be on a sphere.
Okay, he must not be on a sphere. Okay, that's good. I'll agree to that. Did anybody else come up with a different method? Everybody came up with that? I heard all kinds of talking over here. What did you guys come up with?
I was thinking, I don't think it's right though, about if you had a friend.
Okay.
In the torus, if his friend just goes far enough off, you know, in one direction, he won't be able to see him. But I was picturing him living inside the sphere rather than on the inside of the wall. So Like he can still see, I thought he could see in three dimensions in the sphere.
No, he cannot see, it's just a shell.
Yeah, but that didn't make a difference.
Okay, did anybody else come up with any differences? Yeah?
Okay, suppose we draw an arbitrary vector, an arbitrary point.
Okay.
Then we draw an arbitrary curve starting from that point, and we parallel transport the vector along the curve in the sense that we keep the angle between the vector and the tangent vector on each point on the curve we choose as a constant.
Okay, so we choose an arbitrary vector and an arbitrary curve?
Arbitrary smooth curve along the manifold. Yeah, an arbitrary one.
Okay, I'm going to choose that one.
And then we just move the vector along the curve and keeping the angles between the vector and the tangent vector at each point on the curve as a constant.
Like this? Yeah. I mean, I didn't draw it perfectly, but okay.
Then after we finish the closed curve, then we find the vector will have the same, exactly the same orientations if we draw the curve on the torus, but we would get then a net rotation between the orientations before and after the transport if we draw the curve on the sphere.
Okay, so...
Not necessarily...
not necessarily.
Okay. Just an arbitrary curve.
You want it wiggly? is that what you wanted me to do?
Just smooth.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's almost smooth. Okay, and we do the same game.
Yes.
And you're saying when we come back here, we would have some.
A nice change in the orientation of the vector.
Whereas here, when we get back, we would have the same. Okay, interesting. These are very different. Methods than I usually get.
I've got that.
So, yeah?
You said we can't assume that the one on the right is actually a sphere. It's not constant curvatures.
You don't have to assume that if you don't want to. You can't. I mean, there are ways to tell them apart that do not depend on any kind of curvature. Yes?
If you had one person heading out in one direction,
okay. Okay, so if we have two people going off at 90 degrees, I'm just going to draw paths and do different colors from each other on a torus, that's not quite 90 degrees, but, or on a sphere, excuse me, then these two paths would meet once in the back and once here in the front. And if we played the same game on a torus, we have these two curves that are 90 degrees from each other and they intersect at a single point. So yeah, that's another great way to tell them apart. So these are all methods that when formalized one way or another, so I'm not going to talk about any of these methods formally, but these are great ways to tell a torus and a sphere apart. So that's really good. So some of the kinds of things we want to look at is different paths that intersect in different ways, or different properties about being able to bring a length of string in and collapse it all in. Another thing that I want you to consider is, what if Pac-Man wanted to build himself a little house, and he has little pack babies, and so he wants to build a fence around the house so they don't, you know, wander off. Is there any difference between the types of fences that could be built on a torus and on a sphere? We already saw, what's your name? Sorry?
Corey.
Corey pointed out that if we have a fence drawn or a loop of string on the sphere, we could always gather it in, and that's not necessarily the case on the torus. But another consequence of that, and maybe you had already thought of this when you originally came up with this idea, is that if Pac-Man were to build this fence, so that's the fence that goes around his property, then actually that fence doesn't cut the universe into two pieces. So his backyard is going to be the whole entire universe. A torus has a curve that does not separate the torus into two pieces, whereas every curve on the sphere separates the sphere into two pieces. So that's another property of a torus and a sphere that sort of doesn't depend on things like bumpiness or curvature, that's just completely inherent to these two manifolds. Okay, so I just used the word manifold, so I might as well say that that's what we've been talking about here. We've been talking about two-dimensional manifolds, and in particular, we've been talking about closed two-dimensional manifolds. So spaces that are locally two-dimensional, so to a creature living inside them, they appear to just be two-dimensional Euclidean space, and there's no boundary, so there's no edge is another way to say that. Okay, so these are some examples of two-dimensional manifolds. And there are lots of different two-dimensional manifolds. But we want to now take these tools that we have thought about for how Pac-Man might determine the shape of his universe from within and start talking about one dimension up and thinking about a three-dimensional manifold. Okay, so now let's take a minute and do the analogous thing. So we have now this video game where we have a rectangle and we're gonna, oh, I never answered your question about.
It's okay, I answered it myself now.
Okay, so what is the answer?
Okay, well, using your fence analogy, if Pac-Man were to divide his space in any way with a fence, if he were to cross a side, he could still end up on the other side of the fence. Whereas in the sphere, if he drew his fence, he couldn't ever end up on the other side of the fence because he would be stopped by the other side of the fence.
Right, exactly. So we can exhibit a non-separating curve because these two ends are glued together. So this is just a circle. We can exhibit a non-separating curve here in this picture, so it can't be a sphere. So good job. I like it when I don't have to answer the questions. It's better for you to answer them. Okay. So now we want to create a three-dimensional space that has the property that locally it looks three-dimensional, just like our universe, right? But it does not have an edge, and it's finite. So how do we want to do this? So what I want you to do now is take a minute and talk to your neighbors and come up with some way to take this room. So let's pretend this door is closed. Take this room, and we're going to make a video game out of this room. And we're going to come up with some rules similar to Pac-Man's rules, where if you zoop out the side of one wall, something happens to you. See if you can come up with one set of rules, and see if you can come up with maybe another set of rules and determine if they're the same or different, and think about what characteristics your rules have to have. So what restrictions can we put on the rules for this to be sort of a coherent thing? So see if you can come up with something. Say my legs were sticking out from the ceiling. Where would my arms be?
Yours would be there.
So you said that if I went out the wall, I'd come in the ceiling. But if I went out the ceiling, I'd come in that wall. So where would my arms be if my legs were sticking out here? So that's probably, we probably don't want to allow that, right? We don't want to get into some sort of quantum situation or something where I'm not sure where the upper half of my body is. So maybe a rule we should enforce is that any point on the ceiling has to correspond to exactly one point on some other wall.
Okay, I'll amend it a little bit. Anytime you come out of this wall, out of the ceiling, and then anytime you go into the ceiling, you come back out of this wall. So these
okay.
two walls are linked by points, and then these two walls are linked by points.
Okay. Okay. So that's a coherent way to do it. Did anybody else come up with a different one?
Identify
opposite facing ones. So we're going to go out that wall, come in this wall, go out that wall, come in this wall, go out the ceiling, come in here. Okay, so that's maybe the most natural the most natural way to identify these things based on the example we just had. And that manifold that you get from doing that identification is actually called the three-dimensional torus, or the three torus. And so let's try to actually build this thing. So we start with a cube, and we're going to identify, say, the top to the bottom of the cube. So what do we get? Or maybe I'll identify the front to the back of the cube. Oh my, okay. So if I identify the front to the back of the cube, I get this cylinder, this flattened cylinder, or an annulus across an interval. So this is a solid object. And then if I glue, so the top is glued to the bottom. I haven't done that. So if I glue the top to the bottom, I'm going to get this thing that... Sorry, let me draw it all dotted. That's like a solid torus with a torus drilled out of it. So now instead of just looking at a two-dimensional surface, I have the whole donut. So a torus with a little tube drilled out of it. So maybe a little worm went through there and ate his way around there. But now we have to glue that inside torus to the outside torus. And we can't actually do that, right? At least I can't do that. So how are we going to picture three-dimensional manifolds like this if we can't actually glue them up and see them? Well, the way we're going to figure out how to picture stuff like this is actually to go back and talk to Pac-Man and see if we can explain to him how he can picture some two-dimensional manifolds. So what we're going to do now is we're going to explain to Pac-Man what a sphere is. Okay? So does anybody have, off the top of their head, a good way to explain to Pac-Man what a sphere is? So you could say, Pac-Man, a sphere is all the points that are unit distance from the origin in R3. And he'll be like, okay, I can understand that theoretically, but we want him to have a picture in his head. Okay, so how can we explain to Pac-Man what a sphere is? Well, we need to start with objects that he understands. So I'm going to come back to this picture so I can draw some pictures to Pac-Man, for Pac-Man. All right. So Pac-Man, this is what a sphere is. Well, what is Pac-Man familiar with? He's familiar with two-dimensional objects. So for example, Pac-Man totally knows what a disc is. He's all on top of disks. But just think about this from his perspective for a second. He can't see the inside of this disk, right? He can only see the boundary of the disk. So he wouldn't know if this disk was white or red or had a little star on the inside. But he does know what a disk is. So we'll tell Pac-Man, well, a sphere is what you get when you take two disks and you glue them together along their boundary. So pretend that my hands are two disks, okay? Cut off at the wrist and pretend they're flat and round. Okay, so we're gonna glue them together along their boundary. Well, I can glue this part of the boundary together, and if I squish them, I can maybe glue that part of the boundary, but I can't get it all. So what's the solution? How do I glue the total boundary of these disks together? I have to bend them up in three dimensions, right? And then, oh, I can easily glue the two boundary components together. So here Pac-Man is, and he's a good mathematician, so he's stretching his brain, and he's like, okay, well, I can put these two disks together, and I know that I can make them stretchy, so I'll just sort of bend this guy around this guy. Okay, we have a lot of the boundary glued together, but he can never quite get the whole boundary glued together. And we tell him, you're just going to have to use your imagination, Pac-Man, and allow the disks to bend up in this third dimension, and then we can glue it completely together. So this, in some senses, is the best way to actually picture a closed manifold that's the same dimension that you live in, is to think about some flat n-dimensional object. So in this case, we have a couple disks. And imagine bending them in some higher dimension and allowing them to glue together. So how are we going to glue this outside torus to this inside torus? Well, the same way that Pac-Man would glue the outside of this annulus to the inside of this annulus, right? That's another way we could get a torus. We could tell Pac-Man, we'll take this annulus, although he would have to sort of theoretically picture this annulus anyway, because he can't see this circle on the inside, just like we can't see this drilled out torus in there. And we could ask him to bend it up in his mind in the third dimension and glue it together. Okay, so this is our first example of the three torus, and our first, of a three manifold, and our first exercise in trying to get in the mindset of picturing doing these gluings that require us to bend an object up into a higher dimensional space. Okay, so what I've done now is explain to Pac-Man what a two-dimensional sphere is, right? He knows the algebraic definition of all the points at unit length or unit distance from the origin in R3. And now he has this sort of imagination picture that he can have of gluing these two disks together. So now I want what you guys to do is come up with a way to explain to somebody who hasn't come to this talk what a three-dimensional sphere is. So first of all, what's the definition you all learned in like whatever grade it was? Third grade, fifth grade, 10th grade? I don't know when we learned what a sphere was. What's a three-dimensional sphere? Somebody knows, come on. Help me out here. What's a three-dimensional sphere? If a two-dimensional sphere is all the points that are unit distance from the origin in R3, what's a three-dimensional sphere? Okay, the same thing with an extra dimension. So it's going to be all the points that are unit distance from the origin in 4 space, in R4. Okay, so I want you to try to think of a way to picture this object by analogy to how we asked Pac-Man to picture a two-dimensional sphere. Direction, and on the other side, the interior of the disk was pushed into the other direction. So you're suggesting we take two, well, what's the three-dimensional analog of a disk? That's going to be a ball. So a ball is filled in. It's not just the shell, not just the sphere, but a filled-in ball. And if we want to make the two spheres that are the boundaries of these balls inhabit the same space, but we want the interior of one of the balls on one side and the interior of the other ball on the other side. Is that what you said? Okay, that sounded like what you said. So yeah, that's a great way to think about it. Another way you can think about it is just to take two balls and try to squish them together and have their whole boundary identified. But you're not going to be able to physically do that. So you're going to have to imagine, which is the same thing you were saying, one of the spheres bending, or one of the balls bending up in the fourth dimension and the other ball bending down in the fourth dimension, and we glue them together. And this is another example, a three-dimensional sphere is another example of a three-manifold, so an object that's locally three-dimensional but has other global properties and is finite but doesn't have a boundary. So that could theoretically be the shape of our universe, say. I'm not saying it is. Please don't go away from here and say that I said that that was the shape of our universe. But if it was the shape of our universe, we would have this property. We would have the fact that if we were going in a straight line for long enough, eventually we'd start coming back closer, because you'd leave one of the balls, sort of like in the original picture I drew of the globe, you leave one of the hemispheres and start back in the other hemisphere. A similar type thing would happen in the three-dimensional sphere. So the last thing I want us to do, we're not there yet, but the last thing we're going to do is talk about ways that we could distinguish these three manifolds that we've been talking about. So far we have two three-dimensional manifolds. We have the three-dimensional torus, which we get from taking a box and identifying opposite faces. and we have the three-dimensional sphere that we get from taking two balls and identifying their boundaries completely. So the last three-dimensional manifold that I want to talk about is another interesting and simple to describe manifold, which is you take a ball and you remove a ball from the interior. It's a little hard to draw. So this is a ball with a ball removed from the interior. So we have all this space in between the inside and the outside, kind of like when we, that picture I drew here where we had a solid torus and then we had removed a torus from the inside. So it's a similar picture, but we're a ball instead of a solid torus. So what do you think I'm going to do with this picture to make it have no boundary? How am I going to glue it up? What's a logical thing to do? So yeah, glue the two boundaries together. So we have this exterior boundary, which is a sphere, and we have this interior boundary that's a sphere, and so we're just going to glue them together. So this line, for example, is actually a circle. When the line, if we're traveling along this path, as we leave out the top here, we come back in the bottom here at the same point. So that's actually a circle. And this manifold is called S2 cross S1. And I'll just say that this one is called S1 cross S1 cross S1. You don't need to know that, because this one also has a nice name, the three torus. But what they're getting at with this name is that for every point of this sphere, you have one circle that goes from the inner sphere to the outer sphere. So we have a sphere, and at every point in the sphere, we have a circle. So just so you know what this manifold is called. So let me draw our third manifold. So I'm going to draw a S3 like this. So two balls. With the surfaces identified. And there's kind of a neat little property of the names of these three manifolds, right? It seems like by multiplication, these should all be the exact same thing, but they're different. So what I want you to do is now get yourself a toolbox, okay? And you can put whatever you want in the toolbox. You can have our super fast rocket ship if you need it. I don't know that I have any restrictions on what you can have in your toolbox, but I'm sure you'll come up with something that I'll disallow, because you guys seem pretty crafty. So I want you to take your toolbox and figure out which of these manifolds we live in, or figure out some way to distinguish these three manifolds. Okay, so the kinds of things we were looking at when we were helping Pac-Man figure out what manifold he lived in, is he had some string and he was figuring out if he could always bunch it in. He was traveling in different paths and seeing how the paths intersected, things like this. We also had him building some fences. So use those tools and the higher dimensional analogs of those tools to figure out if you can come up with some fundamental difference between these three manifolds. These three, okay?
And different manipulations of those fences can tell you which manifold you're in. And
okay.
If it's a three manifold, you'll have the same situation as Pac-Man on a sphere, where if you put a fence, you can't end up on the other side of the fence because you'd be blocked on the other side.
So you're saying if I built a fence that was like, say, so these two things, these are two disks that are like equatorial disks. Can you guys see what this is a picture of? Does my picture make sense? It's two disks that are sort of perpendicular to the board, and they are...
They're actually connected.
They're connected, and what shape does this fence have?
It's
It's a sphere, yeah, because it's two disks glued together along their boundary, which is exactly a sphere. Okay, so you're saying that any fence like this is going to have what property?
It's going to make half of the manifold inaccessible.
Okay, so there's going to be an inside and an outside of this fence, no matter what.
Sure, but I don't think it would even be an inside and an outside. I think it would be two halves.
Okay, well, whatever. It doesn't. But yeah, there's.
I like arcane cement.
Okay. Okay. There's a one side and the other side.
No, depending on how you orient the same fence in an S2. Would you say S2 by
S1? S2 cross S1.
S2 cross S1. It also depends on how you orient the fence in that one, because depending on the dimension, two of them are the same because it's a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how you want to call it, if in an X and Y, we'll say if you drew the fence is the same way, and that would be going along the sphere.
Okay.
So like where your yellow line is.
Okay, like this.
Fence. Now, if you were on one side of the fence and you traveled around, you could get to the other side. And
so I'm not sure what this fence is. So this fence, this line is just a circle. So what do you want me to do with this line?
Make that circle, that circle line.
So like this way?
Yeah, because...
Which way am I going? Am I going... So because this is just a line. So I'm with you. I'm just not sure what picture you want me to draw.
I'm not going to lie to you. I hadn't thought about it this far.
Okay. Does anybody else have an idea? Does anybody else have a... have a fence in this picture that's not going to have an inside or an outside? Did you think of it?
Around the outside.
Okay, I'm going to get rid of this. So we want a three-dimensional fence, so around the outside, so like, what am I drawing? Okay, let's think about that for a minute. Let's leave the fence discussion aside for a second. Did anybody come up with a non-fence related difference? Yeah?
Now, not a mathematician, because my toad needs an appropriate. But my toolbox has an observer at every point space with a synchronized clock.
Okay.
And I have some flashlights.
Okay.
That's representing light everywhere.
Okay.
And then I can calculate the geodesics from the space I'm in.
Okay.
And that would tell me the curvature of each different space.
Okay. So you claim that these three spaces have different curvature?
I'm hoping.
Okay. So you're saying that theoretically measuring the curvature of a space could distinguish them, but you don't have any evidence that these three things have different curvature?
I'm not a mathematician.
Okay. Well, I am a mathematician, and I never think about curvature, so that's okay. I'll forgive you that. Okay, so certainly... if we had the right tools and we knew something about, we'd have to know something about the curvature or be able to demonstrate that they're different. Yeah, so that's definitely a way we could do it. So we have curvature, maybe fences, but we haven't proved that yet. Yeah? Okay.
In S2 process 1,
mm-hmm.
if you had a two-sphere that was just like in the interior of what you've drawn.
So like a middle two-sphere, like that?
And if I understood the identification correctly, then you could pass toward, like, go toward the center of that drawing.
Uh-huh.
The other side.
So like if I started out here, and let's say I'm on the inside of this sphere now, this fence, I could walk this way, and now I'm on the other side of the fence. Yeah, so we have a non-separating two-sphere in our S1 cross S2. But notice that not every sphere is non-separating, right? This sphere, for example, has an inside and an outside. So it's not the case that every single two-sphere is non-separating. Just like on the torus, there are plenty of fences he could draw, he could build, that would have a sensible inside and a sensible outside. Okay, so if we could exhibit a non-separating two-sphere in our universe, actually it turns out that it would either be S1 cross S2 on the nose or something related to S1 cross S2. This is unique.